Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street, the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed. I'm Kim.
I'm John.
And today we are talking about horror musicals. Specifically, Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
Too long of a title. Really just needs to be called Sweeney Todd.
I don't really care. actually, both horror musicals we're going to be talking about for this double feature have quite long titles.
That's true.
I think we should give a little context for this double feature. People who are our patrons, people who support us on Patreon and have been listening to our Graveyard Smash series, have been experiencing a lot of classic horror movies with us over the last few months.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were doing the Phantom of the Opera section, we've been pairing classic monsters with a modern monster to kind of like cap off the series within a series. And for Phantom of the Opera, we did the film adaptation of Phantom of the Opera, a musical that we had not visited before, because I think we were both like, we don't like musicals. We're not musical people. We don't like musicals at all. And then we realized during the watching and recording of that episode that we are in fact musical people, and we have been all along.
Well, it was also around Christmas, and there's plenty of musicals we rewatch.
I was listening
Christmas.
To the soundtrack today while I was emptying the dishwasher.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up with it. I don't know why I'd say that I'm not. I talk about musicals the way most normal people talk about horror movies. Like, oh, I don't like horror movies. Like, I don't like musicals except for this, and they don't all have to be horror musicals. But I will say,
do all have to be horror musicals except for Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, Moulin Rouge, American in Paris, White Christmas. Like,
White Christmas.
Anyway, the Umbrellas of Chernobyl. I don't know how to pronounce it.
That's sad, though.
I think I'm just real. I don't want to say snobby, but like
Yeah, I'd say you're snobby.
In general, sure.
I think you're definitely a musical snob.
I don't think that I don't think it's snobbish, because I don't walk in and go, I don't know, I think the original cast recording was much better. Like, I prefer Gerard Butler as the Phantom, but I think you're right.
It's very gritty.
I'm hot and cold with musicals in a way that I'm not with horror movies. I could watch 100 subpar slashers.
I will agree with you there. I'm very critical.
Yeah.
Very, very, very critical of musicals. And so, like, if you're in my bag of musicals I love, I'm going to learn all the words and sing all the songs.
Yeah, but it's not like I'm an elitist with it, where it's just like, oh, you're not doing anything to elevate the genre. Like, if I like it, I love it. And if I don't like it, I never give it another thought.
But one thing I especially love about musicals is when they are horror in nature.
Those are the best ones.
And Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, the musical and the film, are so horror forward. You know, every time I watch the movie and when we've seen the play, I have been so surprised at just, you're like, wow, this is really about a serial killer. We're just watching a serial killer sing songs, and I'm about it.
We have a whole wistful montage where people are getting their throats slashed open one after another. And if that's not enough, they get dropped like 50 feet into the basement where their heads split open.
And did I mention that this movie is about cannibalism?
Kim's really just into it for Johnny Depp more than anything.
You know what? My only criticism of this film is that I think the casting choices were poor because they're not actual singers.
This is what Kim means when she says she's critical. We're in here talking about how much we love it, and she's like, but the cast?
But the cast.
Swap them
choice.
All. No, keep Sacha Baron Cohen and get
rid
of the rest.
She was fantastic. yeah, it's just because they're not singers and you can tell that they are outside of their natural strength.
Isn't that great about it, though? Like, don't you love that they're
I mean, that's what I loved about Gerard Butler in Phantom of the Opera, but okay. Because he's like a gritty and unpolished character, the Phantom. Or at least his version of the Phantom.
You mean to tell me that Sweeney Todd isn't gritty and unpolished?
Like, that's the guy we're getting to sing a whole fucking musical.
They did such an impressive job with the material that I'm not faulting them at all. You can tell that they're outside of their wheelhouse.
Okay, so we got into the thick of it real quick. Three good things about Sweeney Todd.
We've already said horror, blood, breaking necks, cannibalism.
Well, I'm glad we got our bases covered. All right. Officially, I want the format down. Here are three good things. We got lots of throats, lots of broken heads, and some great songs.
And honestly, Sacha Baron Cohen is maybe one of the good things.
Incredible.
So good.
Yeah. It felt like stunt casting at the time because Bruno, I think Bruno had just come out. I'm not sure. Either way, he was still riding high on Borat. Yeah, on Borat. He's amazing in the movie. He's great.
And it's not... for yucks, it's a very... like,
well, I mean, the character
is a funny character, but he's as flamboyant as the makeup for Sweeney Todd is.
I think a lot of the casting is great in this movie. I think across the board, I think it's very good. I think the lyrics, man, we're really critical. Like, we just can't let anything go.
You shouldn't have said all that shit about us in musicals because you were wrong.
All right, look, we're just going to toss the trailer. We're going to get a sense... of the vibe of Sweeney Todd. It'll probably have some of the overture in it. And then we're going to do our best not to try and sing along while we talk about this movie.
No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do it to you.
This is the tale of an ordinary man who had everything.
Barker, his name was. Benjamin Barker.
Until a man of power stole his freedom, destroyed his family, and banished him.
May the Lord have mercy on your soul.
For life. And in his sorrow, a new man was born.
15 years dreaming, I might come home to a wife and child.
Benjamin Barker.
No Barker. Sweeney Todd now. And he will have his revenge. Where's my wife?
She's gone. And he's got your daughter.
Judge Turpin.
You got to leave this all behind you now.
No. These are desperate times. And desperate measures are called for.
All right! You, sir!
No one's in the chair. Come on, come on! Sweeney's waiting. I want you, bleeders.
You, sir! Too, sir. Welcome to the grave. I will have vengeance. I will have salvation.
I can guarantee the closest shave you will ever know.
May the good Lord smile on you.
You're barking mad.
The years no doubt have changed me.
That's all very well, but what are we going to do about him?
Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, is currently sitting at a 7.3 out of 10 on IMDb.
Wow.
An 86% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 3.5 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
You know, I was really surprised upon revisiting this movie how well received it was. I think it's because I was lukewarm on it when it came out. That I just assumed everyone was, but Johnny Depp won a Golden Globe or something for it. Like, it won some shit.
Well, the musical itself was pretty respected Sondheim Productions. So.
Yeah, no, I get that. And it does have kind of an existing audience, but like it made fucking money.
Yeah.
It got awards.
Everybody.
People fucking enjoyed it.
Back when it came out in the theater, even the entire movie theater we were in, because we saw it together, we were all just like, I don't know about that. That was different. Like we none of us could, I don't know, none of us really locked into it. At least at our screening.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate it now more, maybe because I've had more time to stew with it. I'm more familiar with the story. We've seen a couple different variations of the stage play. Like, we've seen a legitimate stage play that had a lot of staging and really elaborate sets. And then we saw, like, a really broken down version that was really cool and minimalistic. And the movie is kind of playing to the fact that it is a stage play in ways. Just that it's very, like, set heavy. We're on the set. That were tight and with the characters, and you also kind of feel like there's no connection between locations. It in the same way that Moulin Rouge is, like, you zoom out to Paris and then you zoom in somewhere else. You know what I mean? Like,
I love that
you're into an
movie.
Apartment. With this, it's like you zoom out into London and you're sweeping through the streets, but they all have like a CGI kind of feel to them, and they're not played for realism. And then you get to a very tactile set.
Yeah.
There's a juxtaposition between, you know, zooming through the streets in this digital world and then getting to Mrs. Lovett's meat shop, and they built it.
Yeah, it's a whole shop.
Yeah.
I was reading that Tim Burton had planned to do this all just CGI, green screen. And basically, like, the production team talked him out of it.
That's good, because we're in the air, like, we're just on the cusp of the era where Tim Burton has discovered green screen.
And he's like, let's do it all. Let's do everything in green screen. And we're all like, sure, bud. Looking forward to Beetlejuice 2.
Yeah, somebody should just lock that man in a stage with claymation and not let him leave.
Yeah. He should only be allowed to direct from Zoom. Yeah. Like, everybody else on set's just like, let's just close the laptop for a minute and have a chat.
We will only permit him to have a Windows 98 computer.
Because, those scenes where we're zooming through, I don't love it. Even the intro for the movie, and I don't know if it's just...
It's very stylized. I tell myself it's stylized. They weren't going for realism.
Uh-huh.
The opening credits have a House on Haunted Hill remake vibe.
They have a cool digital intro to a video game you just bought on Steam from the
90s. Yeah, the blood is like real red.
The blood is theatrical throughout the whole movie. It's like a giallo, you know, like in the sense that it's really pink.
Yeah, it's melted red wax red. Yeah,
and that it might have been like a for ratings thing, but it still looks like it all looks pretty gnarly. They slash a lot of throats in this movie. But like, I really wish it was all more practical.
Yeah, and also the color tone on the film feels very After Effect-y.
Yeah.
It's fun in a way, like when we see Sweeney Todd and Mrs. Lovett in her imaginary dreams and when they're at the park and stuff. Like,
oh,
they look like the characters in Corpse Bride.
They look like dead people. Everybody, that was the one thing I really appreciated in this movie, is how pale everybody is. Everybody is on death's door. Right? The bags under Sweeney Todd's eyes on Johnny Depp. Like, he looks like he was punched in the face at birth and it never healed.
But so, I mean, that is like kind of trademarky of Tim Burton, but it works for a musical because that's what musical makeup looks like.
Yeah.
It is very thick and high contrast and heavy, so you can see it from the back.
Yeah, you're playing to the back of the crowd, the back of the audience. And this is always the problem with adapting stage plays for film, because film, there's a perspective to every shot. And Sweeney Todd as a story, now, like, regardless of whether it's on stage or in a movie, hinges on a handful of characters not recognizing each other. That's it. That's the whole movie, is people not recognizing Sweeney Todd. Sweeney Todd not recognizing people from his past. Nobody recognizing anybody. Like, they've all got history. And the argument is that Sweeney Todd is just so singularly focused on revenge.
And
he's got one guy
and
he wants to kill.
And it's been so long, and you're like, you're telling me you didn't recognize Johnny Depp from younger Johnny Depp?
Or that you didn't recognize your own daughter at some point?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I guess she was a baby. I don't know. And it's so on a stage, I buy that. Absolutely. Because I can't see them. I'm not front row center. I can't afford those tickets.
Well, and especially to the beggar woman. It's the big secret of the movie and the play.
Yeah.
She's present the entire time. In the stage play, you have more of a chorus, which I think they you know, for time, for the sake of budget, probably. Mm. They don't have as much chorus in this. Like, it's not a big 30-person sing-along.
Okay.
And I think she can hide among the crowd better in that.
Even outside of just the crowd, you're on the stage. You can't afford 100 extras. Okay, we've got one beggar woman in the background, and like she kind of like wanders into the scene. It breaks up the action. We move on to something else. Like, she's there to people the scene, you know? Like, we only see one woman like her, but we know that there's 100.
But
more.
I'm saying is if like all of the townsfolk get one line in a song, it's not weird if she has a line in the song.
But also in a movie, you don't give a close up to a character that's not important. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
That's what I mean when I say perspective. Like, the camera's here, we're saying something by focusing on her. And like, maybe you don't think about it the first time you watch the movie, but you know that she's important. She comes back. And then there's also a hint of like, do I recognize that actress? You know? So they wouldn't just cast a nobody in a role that's integral to the plot.
Well, and they keep calling her an old woman, like, throw the old woman out. And she's very clearly not an old woman. So that you also kind of lose in the stage play if you can't afford the expensive seats.
That is true.
But yeah, there is definitely some things that are, I don't want to say lost in the translation from stage to screen, because I think they're intentional choices.
No,
made...
we're snobs. Lost in translation is the perfect thing to say.
I think that they're intentional choices, and I think they actually make film adaptations of musicals better, because stage plays are very like maximalist when it comes to song and cast and making sure every role that you play and perform is worth it to train for 6 months and
that's
then
true.
Come every night and do matinees, even if you only have like one line, because you're coming back, you're singing the chorus, like you're on stage most of the night, even if you have a small part.
Yeah.
Not in film.
Somebody's got to come on stage and be like, mischief, mischief, you know, twice a night.
Or like, Mr. Todd came on a boat, something, something. I'm making up this song.
Okay.
They cut it out of the movie.
I
so
had
I
just
it.
Assumed that maybe you'd watched a stage play while I was at work today.
No, I should have done that.
That would have been a good idea. Angela Lansbury playing Mrs. Lovett. I'll say the biggest addition in terms of translating it to the screen is that it's way gorier than ever before.
That is...
And that's
it's such a pleasant surprise. The musical itself, like we've seen a version that is quite gory. We've seen another one that's tamer.
Yes.
The movie pulls no punches.
Not at all.
And it's kind of surprising that it doesn't, in the same sense that like Sleepy Hollow was a surprisingly dark turn for Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Sweeney Todd is just like, okay, we're going full horror, and the only thing that's not horror is the fact that they're singing.
Pretty much, yeah. It is truly gory, and it's not just the first kill to sort of give you the shock and impact.
We see
of
every
it.
Single corpse's neck.
Every single
neck
corpse.
And so much have... so that even I was like, this is a little excessive, I think.
This is a lot.
I'm not complaining.
Yeah, you got to imagine the conversation too. Like, no, we need it. We need more. We got to drop more bodies.
Especially because they had to make a dummy of each actor.
They look so good.
They do look good.
Because some of those dummies are characters that you've seen before, like, or actors that you've seen before, faces you recognize. And when they hit the ground, you're like, god damn, they just killed Alan Rickman.
You're like, ah.
Poor Alan Rickman. He is a creep in this
movie. He's so fucking creepy, and it makes me sad because he's such a debonair villain, and he's such a cool bad guy, and you love to hate him.
He couldn't do anything else.
But I don't
debonair.
Love to hate him in this. I just hate him in this.
Yeah, he's truly a monster.
Like, fucking creepy.
Yeah, just a guy who is using his power to... do whatever the fuck he wants. Like, he kidnaps women, he rapes women, he drives women insane. He's just unstoppable. He's the judge. His character is essentially, like, the law of the area. He is the highest form. Nobody can stop him. He does whatever he wants. He literally, like, his relation to Sweeney Todd in the story is that 15 years ago, Sweeney Todd, who is now coming back to London for the first time in years.
But his old name was Benjamin Barker.
Benjamin Barker. He has just decided that he wants Benjamin Barker's wife, and he arrests Benjamin Barker for no fucking reason. Trumped up charges.
Trumped up charges. He puts him away for 15 years.
I think he puts him away for life. I get the impression... that Benjamin Barker has escaped jail.
Oh, okay.
Because he's been on the sea. Like, no one gets, like, I judge you to sailor work. I mean, maybe. I don't know.
That's true, because there is kind of a line, like, thanks for picking me up. Like,
yeah, he's sailed the ocean, you know? And, like, he has seen
its wonders.
There's a
something,
lot.
Something, Peru.
There's a lot of good in this movie. The opening lines of dialogue are from Anthony, who's a young boy who's been working on the ship, who is essentially like the only friend of Sweeney Todd. And he's so happy to be London.
He's the only innocent party in this entire movie.
He's also one of the only young people. And I think that's integral to the optimism that he has for humanity, because Sweeney Todd, he's like, yes, I too have seen the world, and it's and its cruelty is as wondrous.
Something, something filled with shit.
Okay. Yes. Anyway, he's saying that, like, the wonders of the world are only matched by the cruelties of the world, and there is no place in the world like London. Like, London is the asshole of the earth, is essentially. Like, that's what Sweeney Todd says. It's filled with shit. Everybody in the town is awful.
Oh, and we're in peak coal London.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It is black. The smoke is black. The roads are black.
The lungs are black.
The lungs are black. The sky is black. Everything is black.
Yeah. It's great. It's exactly what you imagine when you think of, like, old-timey London. And from what I understand, I'm currently reading a book about it. This is exactly what it looked like. If anything, maybe worse.
So gross.
It's awful. It killed people. It's killing people today.
Cool fucking set. But...
Oh, it looks great. Like, of course there's a serial killer stalking people in the streets here. What else would you do as a pastime in a spot that looks like hell?
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sweeney Todd has come back. He hates this place. He doesn't want to be here, but he's back solely for revenge.
No, I think he initially thought he was going to come back.
Oh, you think so?
And rescue his wife and daughter. But upon going back to his old room that he was staying in, he finds out from Mrs. Lovett, who owns the meat shop downstairs, that his wife poisoned herself after Judge Turpin basically raped her in front of the whole town.
I don't know if it's a basically thing. I think that's exactly what happened. They invited her to a masquerade ball. Like, they took away her husband, who completely just decimated her, you know? Like, she's on her own with a child. She's got no source of income. He's just waiting around for her to ask for help. That's essentially all it is. I think in his twisted mind, he just assumed, like, oh, of course she would pick
She'll run to me.
Yeah, I'm a judge. I'm better than a barber. And then he was confused that she didn't do that, and he just waited until she was desperate enough, and then, yeah, he, like, raped her in front of a whole party. She went crazy.
The creepiest thing, though, is how disposable she was after all of the work he put into getting her.
Oh, of course.
And it's never spoken of. Like, he never sings a song about how he was like, oh, I'm so disappointed that it didn't work out with Lucy, and now I have to, like, raise her daughter for 17 years so I can marry her.
Yeah, it's so twisted. No, she's just like, you know, just another girl.
Because he surely knows who the beggar woman is, right?
Probably, maybe.
But it's just... He doesn't even care.
Oh, he doesn't have to. He's above the law. He's unstoppable. That's what's truly evil about him, right?
So, but that's what I'm saying, is that he doesn't love her. He covets her.
Yeah.
That's fucking not good.
Yeah, and it makes you sad that it's Alan Rickman, because you love Alan Rickman so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's what makes him such a great character in the movie, right?
No,
because you have an opinion of Alan Rickman, and then you put him in something where you're just like, oh, this is bad.
The whole time I'm watching, I'm like, you know... I don't like the character, but he's going to sing soon, and we get to hear Alan Rickman
pretty
go,
women.
Go, bum, 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 bum.
Yeah, no, that's the fucking funniest part of the whole movie, yeah. Man, I love how quickly he gets in the chair. That is, like, maybe the high point of the entire movie. Sweeney Todd has been in business for a week, like an afternoon.
And he's the big boss. He's set up as the big boss. We know he's the big boss.
Yeah, his whole goal, like everything that he's working toward is killing the judge. Like, I came back hoping that I would maybe, like, my life was always going to be ruined, but like maybe we could pick up the pieces and start over again. And he's found out from Mrs. Lovett, who's now renting the house that used to be his. She's turned it into a pie shop. The room upstairs that was his barbershop is still empty. There's nothing for him to come back to.
I love how, like, he H.H. Holmes that chair so quickly.
Yeah, he just immediately makes a shoot down to the basement where he can dispose of all these bodies, right? It solves both their problems, though, because he is, I guess, practicing to get to Judge Turpin.
No, I think he just decides that, like, fuck it, everybody's bad, and I'm just gonna clean up London. And whoever comes to my door.
That's exactly it. He has such a rage that it is turned out to the entire world. When the judge gets into his chair, he misses the opportunity to kill him. I think this is an incredible scene because he has been talked into being patient by Miss Lovett. She's like, you have to be patient, because he wants to just go out in the street and kill him as soon as he sees him. But she tells him to, like, you got to play the long game. It's also, you have to savor it. Like, it's more in the planning that you're going to enjoy it, not in the actual act. And, like, good things come to those who wait. And when the judge shows up, he takes his time. He, you know, cleans the chair. They sing a song. They talk about women. He lathers him up, and he actually shaves him. He doesn't just immediately go for the throat. He's being as patient as he can, and he's just savoring every minute of it. And because he does that, he misses the opportunity to kill him. Because, like, you know, the other kid from the boat comes in. They find, you know, Judge Turpin realizes that this is the boy who's been trying to steal my ward away. And this is the problem with musicals. There is no clean cut way to describe.
I love it.
Everything.
It's such a mess.
It's too much. It's too much.
It's a tangled web of time and lies.
That's exactly it. There's too much going on for a 40-minute podcast is the problem. But it's such a great scene.
Get out the web, John. Get out the web.
It's such a good scene.
Okay, so Lucy has Joanna. Benjamin Barker, Sweeney Todd. Joanna is stuck like a bird in a cage up in Judge Turpin's house.
Good song.
The sailor boy sees her and he's like, I love your golden hair. I'm going to marry you. But you're stuck inside those walls. I'm going to get you out. And he talks to Sweeney Todd, who we met on the boat at the beginning. Ugh. And he's like, can I bring my blonde-haired girl to your house just for a few hours so that we can escape Judge Turpin? And he's like, that's my daughter. Yeah, you totes can. And then Judge Turpin is there when Anthony comes by, and then Judge Turpin finds out.
No one's lost. Everybody's following this perfectly. It's a lot.
And Mrs. Lovett's cooking people downstairs.
Mrs. Lovett's not cooking people downstairs yet. It's once he takes his rage for Judge Turpin and turns it on the entire city. Because it's not just Judge Turpin. It's all of London.
Well, it starts because he kills Pirelli. And Pirelli is this showman about town. He's got an elixir that's no good. He recognizes Sweeney Todd. He's maybe the only person in the movie that recognizes Sweeney Todd is Benjamin Barker. And so he tries to basically extort him.
Yeah, exactly. He says, like, I'm gonna tell everybody that you're Benjamin Barker or you're gonna give me 50% of all your earnings.
And he goes, slice, and says no.
Yeah. He's one of 100 people that try and take advantage of Sweeney Todd throughout the movie. It's not even just Sweeney Todd. Everybody is taking advantage of everybody. They're all just clawing at each other for every scrap that they can get. Nobody has, like, a soul in this movie. Everybody's just looking out for themselves.
Not Miss Lovett.
Are you fucking kidding me?
She loves you.
She's the worst person in this movie. Truly.
Why?
And that is like the crushing blow for Benjamin Barker, Sweeney Todd, at the end of this movie.
Okay, but she's
the
one person
that he trusted, that he thought was as broken as him, that was just the two of them. Like, even though he's not, like, in love with her, they're not a couple or anything, but there was at least an understanding between the two of them.
Yeah, they had a business relationship.
Yeah, she took advantage of him from day one.
Because she had a crush on him, though. Like, yeah, her behavior was wrong, but her intentions were good. Maybe a little self-serving. Oh, shit, that's what you were saying.
She hid that dagger so she could get in close and stick it between his ribs.
But she didn't do it for the meat pies. The meat pies were a byproduct of the
murder.
The
meat pies were a fringe benefit. Like, how are we going to get rid of all these bodies? How am I going to make new meat pies? Oh, if only there was some sort of solution that could solve both our problems.
And then a finger fell into somebody's mouth, and that didn't happen, but...
Yeah, no, it's
they just sung a song about it, and then everybody was on board.
It's a real good song.
It is a real good song.
It's the kind of song that makes you want to eat a human pie. Nah, she's truly terrible because you can see it. I mean, it's great. It's all in Helena Bonham Carter's performance here. Like, you probably, maybe it's a little more forecast in the stage play. I don't really remember all entirely, but she's a little cagey and it's just subtle enough that she's like, oh, what happened to that, your old wife? She drank poison. Like, she just withholds enough information to get him to do whatever she wants. And, like, it's maybe get him to do whatever she wants is a little bit of an overstatement.
I think she's permitting the murder because she loves him. She's like, but I'm going to keep this little boy. You're not going to murder him. Like, I don't know if she's entirely on board with the serial killer living upstairs, but she loves him, so she's permitting it.
I think that helps her have a business again. Like, yeah. She's going to get thrown out on the street soon if she doesn't start selling pies.
Mm-hmm.
And she can't afford meat, so she can't make pies. Except now she's got an overabundance of a meat supply that she can make the best pies in the city. I think it's all a benefit for her. And she's lonely. And she loves Todd. I think she maybe knew who he was beforehand and, like, thought that he was attractive. I think she maybe coveted him in a similar way that Judge Turpin...
Like a quiet way.
Yeah, coveted, Benjamin Barker's wife.
It would have been interesting if we maybe saw her in one of the flashbacks, because we don't know, like...
That would have been extra evil.
Is she a new renter to the house? Like, was she there when they were living up above? Like, she recognizes him.
Yeah. So, she could have at any point told him about his wife and that she's not dead and that his daughter's over there. And then also,
but it's a tragedy, John.
It is truly tragic. Everything about this is bad. And that's the hardest part about this story. It's that it's not that it's misguided rage or it's just sadness. It's just horribly sad.
It's true. And they are all tragic characters. It's really hard, though, to sympathize with Todd once he starts slitting the throats of everyone in town. Like, he's singing while he's doing it, and it's great, and it's wonderful. But you're like, ooh, this isn't going to end good for you because you've done bad things.
But everybody in this town, it's just this city. It's full of bad people doing bad things, and nobody's doing anything about it. And he's at rock bottom. His wife's gone. His daughter's gone. His entire life is shattered. He can't get the judge anymore. Like, it's all gone. So the only thing he can do is just murder all of London. Like, you can't blame him for that. Like, just the emotion, the thought process.
You'd be a real bad defense lawyer.
Oh, absolutely.
But look why he did it.
Yeah, I mean, who among us hasn't wanted to slit the throats of everyone? Indiscriminately.
Look how ingenuitive the chair was.
I mean, is he that bad? I mean, look at her. She tricked him.
She told him a little lie.
Yeah, but it's such a... Oh, see, this is what's so good about that song that she sings with the little boy that they've taken in. He was sort of the slave to Pirelli.
Yeah.
But he's looking out for her now, and she's looking out for him. Like, nothing's going to happen to you, not while I'm around. Like, I'm just going to take care of you. And she sings that song to him as she's locking him in the basement so she can go get Sweeney Todd to kill the kid because he's asked too many questions.
Because he knows too much.
That's her entire relationship with Sweeney Todd as well. Like, she's just cocooned him so that way he doesn't know the truth because it would hurt him. But, like, that's all he needs. Like, that's all he wanted.
The crazy thing, though, is that Todd is so blinded by rage that it's not even about getting his daughter back. The only one that wants to free his daughter, really, is Anthony the sailor boy. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't even go to the judge's house to see her. The only time he sees her in the movie is when he almost accidentally kills her at the end.
Yeah.
And it's almost like once he kills the judge, is there going to be any attempt to reconcile his family and what's left of it? I don't know.
He can't think beyond that.
I think he's too far gone.
Absolutely. And, like, I think that's what's sad about it. Like, I don't think that it's just, misplaced rage or like blinded by revenge.
Yeah, because imagine if you were Joanna and you found out that your like long lost father has been in town for mm-hmm. weeks, has yeah. set up a business.
And that's what's so interesting about Joanna and Anthony, like the sailor boy that is going to save her, because like they're the one beam of hope in all of this. Everything else about it, and it's probably just because that they're too young, you know, like maybe you're naive, you haven't been around long enough to see this world try and beat you down.
Well, I think that's kind of what the ending says with the little boy, Toby, or is his name Toby?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because he ultimately kills Sweeney Todd in the end, and it's because he's seen like the horrors of London.
He doesn't, like, he definitely doesn't understand the full story, you know?
I think he goes crazy down there, though, because he sees corpses and meat and all kinds of shit.
The fucking funniest part is that they're teaching him how to grind the meat up, and, there's just body parts in the grinder. They're not doing anything
to
hide it.
He's a little boy, he's short!
He ate a meat pie that had a toe in it. You mean, like, they gotta do a better job cleaning up this meat, because, like, they would've, if that little boy didn't eat it, they would've served it to somebody outside, up on the street. You know,
true.
An adult person would have been like, there's a fucking toe in here. Like, close this shop down. Like, it would have been game over soon. They were in berserker mode. They didn't know what they were doing. They were going way too hard, way too fast. And there was no checks and balances.
Yeah, business was booming. They weren't auditing the individual pies.
I think Joanna and Anthony are like the real heart of the movie. It's interesting too that Joanna never knows that it's her dad. Like he kind of like sends her out into the world without ever knowing like the sacrifices that it took to free her, which is very much a parenting move as far as like sad tragic stories go. Without Sweeney Todd, she would not have been freed. So like inadvertently he was helping execute her escape.
Mm-hmm.
But she never knew that. And also, if it was really up to him, he would have accidentally killed her. He kills her mother, his wife, because he's too blinded by the rage. He's too consumed with killing the judge. She just sort of wanders into his barber spot, and rather than shooing her out, he just slits her throat. Right as she's saying, like, hey, don't I recognize you? But the judge is literally coming up the stairs. Like, he's finally got his opportunity again, and he just needs to get this woman the fuck out of the way. So he just slashes her throat, drops her down to the basement, and later finds out that it's his wife.
Yeah, and he dies over her body, and it's so fucking poetic, and it's like full Renaissance painting when he dies.
Yeah. Very sad.
It is very sad. The music is great, though.
Oh, music's incredible.
And it's great, too, because you're right. All of the characters have their own stories and their own motivations. And it's so great when they tangle within the songs. Like, there's a lot of harmonizing.
Yeah.
And they're each singing a different verse, but they come together for the chorus, and it has a different meaning for each of them.
Oh, yeah. And especially the Pretty Women song, like, where he almost kills Judge Turpin for the first time. That's the fucking best.
But the times that Mrs. Lovett is singing to Sweeney Todd, and he's singing about loving his knives, and she's singing about loving him.
Yeah.
It's so wonderful.
It's great to rewatch knowing the motivations of everybody involved. Because it's also just, like, on their faces, you know? Like, it's the movie thing. Like, this is what amplifies the story from the stage to the screen. Because, like, you can have quiet moments like that where you see, like, into the soul of this character that you just won't get on stage from row Z.
But the music is just so good. The
music's great.
It's one of my favorite musicals, and I think it's because so many of the songs are hits. Like, even the ones I don't necessarily, like, the ones I make fun of a little bit, like the Joanna song.
Oh, okay.
I still fucking love it.
I actually really like that song. I think it's good. There are, you know, the problem, I think, with the movie is that it just ends on such a downer note. It's not really climactic. I don't know. It's like, it wallows in the end. And, like, it has to. Like, that's the story. That's the character. That's everybody. It's not a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's interesting.
So the stage play ends where they sing kind of a song that it's, like, a lesson. Let it be a lesson to you by being blinded by revenge.
Wow. It had the fucking haze code at the end of it, this play. Well, just a reminder, everybody, we weren't doing this just for bloodlust. We're trying to tell you to be better people.
But see, this is what I was saying about the chorus earlier, because the chorus plays such a big part in the play. They are almost, they narrate the story almost. Like, they're the beginning, they're the end. So you do lose that in this. Hmm. Which is actually, I was reading on Twitter last night, because I went down a black hole, because Anthony Head has a cameo in this that we had just realized on this watch, which is a perfect fitting for our double feature. But I was like, oh my god, has he played Sweeney Todd before? I must find the audio recordings of this.
That'd be incredible.
Because I would lose my mind. It doesn't exist. I hope I can.
Because it never happened. It's not that it doesn't exist because no one recorded it. It's just pure headcanon for Kim.
Okay, I'm trying to like Mandela effect it, switch universes. I'm putting it out into the ether. I would like to be in the universe where he did play Sweeney Todd because I just need it in my life.
Let's just lie. Let's just be like, oh man, there's a great cast. I can't find it anywhere. I heard it as a kid back when, you know, when Buffy was like the biggest thing, like Anthony Head on stage doing Sweeney Todd. If you've seen it out there, like, and it's so strange because I talk to people and people are like, he never did that, but I'm I have definitive memories of it.
He's got the like the voice for it. It would be such a good Todd.
Oh, it'd be incredible.
But so, okay, this is I'm getting back to a point. So the reason why he has that cameo is he was actually going to play a bigger part in the movie.
Oh,
him and Christopher Lee and one other person I can't remember. They were going to be like these ghosts and they were going to narrate the story.
Okay.
And they were going to kind of fill in that role of the townspeople. I'm assuming he was going to get his head chopped off and then he was just going to like stick around kind of thing.
Love this.
But they had to, I don't know if it was for time or if it was because of shooting time, because I think Johnny Depp had to take some time off because his daughter was sick.
Yeah. So just like whatever, during production, development, whatever.
But also musicals themselves are over 2 hours long, so they definitely had things they needed to cut.
That's the craziest thing. If you've never seen a musical live, like you get to the intermission, it's like the end of act one, you're like, wow. What a weird place to end it. But that was pretty good. Good night out. Yeah, I think we got our money's worth in those tickets.
And they're like, go get a drink and a pee because you're halfway through.
You're like, oh, fuck. There's a whole second movie to this first play.
That's the fun part about watching a film adaptation once you've seen the plays, is half of the movie is going, is this the one before the intermission or is this the one? Like,
yeah. Yeah, we've seen a couple stage versions of this. We've seen two really interesting ones. We saw one, my parents actually gave us tickets once to go see it at the Shaw Theater in Niagara-on-the-Lake, which is like...
Was that the minimalist one or was that the big
set? That was the big one that we saw, which was really cool. We also saw a
Because I remember it having a
Toronto.
Really cool fucking set.
Yeah, no, it was a full-ass set. Like we're basically
we
in
were
the
dropping
pie
bodies
shop.
down a chute.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Lovett's meat pies were underneath. Like, it was wonderful.
It was pretty great that we saw like a legit version of that. Yeah, and then we saw a minimalist one, which... This one was really cool. But
I was a little let down. Our Sweeney Todd had no hair.
It was how do you have a bald barber?
I was really upset about it. It was cool. It was minimalist. I wish we had known a little bit beforehand, but it was cool to see a different interpretation.
No, but I think maybe the one thing you're forgetting about it, which was like...
Was the bucket of blood?
Well, yeah, there's plenty of blood. There's lots of blood. Love that. Also, they would like flood the place with red light when people would get killed. Nah, it's that all of the actors on stage, and it was a minimal cast. Like, some people were playing more than one role. It was maybe 7 people in total. They also, they were playing the instruments for the songs. Like, the people, there was no band. The people on stage played the music for the songs that they were singing. It was amazing.
And every time somebody was murdered, somebody poured a bucket of blood into another bucket. It was great.
Yeah, and it was all... But yeah, like, everything got flooded with red light. We got, like, the Kill Bill, like... Wah, 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 wah. It was really cool. But yeah, it was, like, black box shit. It was great.
They need to make more horror plays, because I would see every single one of them. Every once in a while, I check theaters, and I'm like, y'all doing anything spooky? Y'all got anything spooky coming up? And they're like, maybe Halloween. And you're like, but what about, like,
July? But it's November.
Yeah, like, maybe February? You could do that.
Spooky month. Let's do it. Yeah.
Spooky isn't just a season, guys.
So how do you rate Sweeney Todd?
I've warmed up a lot to it. And I don't know if it's just because, like, I really like the musical. I'm trying to look at the film as its own thing. Something about me can't get past the fact that I know Helena Bonham Carter and Johnny Depp are not singers.
Oh, okay.
They do a fine job, and there are some parts, like parts and songs, where they're fucking amazing and so good. And I wouldn't say either of them do even a bad job at all. Like, they're doing a fine job. But when you've heard musicians sing
it, shut
up, John. 3.5. Leave me alone. You fucking fuck.
Yeah, I'm giving it a 3 out of 4. Yeah, I think it's good. It's, I don't know what it is. It's just, it doesn't have like a wham bam finish is maybe all it is. Like, maybe I need the chorus. I don't really remember the chorus.
Do you need to see Joanna and Anthony run off together? Because
maybe.
I do. Is
one,
it Anthony?
One quick shot of them just walking toward a boat and like the moonlight behind them, or they're holding hands going down the blackness of London. Like they're walking into the darkness together.
I think it's because it's a tragedy. We have to end in that basement with little Toby or Tobias or whatever his name is, like laughing maniacally. And that vignette of Todd with embracing his dead wife that he murdered.
Such a bloody musical. It's so great. Even like that shot, that final, the last thing Mrs. Lovett sees, like the demon-y, like that's the one time.
Oh yeah, he throws her in the fucking fire. We didn't even
throws her in
that.
The fucking fire. And then like, yeah, he peers in through the porthole or whatever. It's just like, and that's the one time he truly looks like the demon barber of Fleet Street. Because he's got fire in his eyes. It's so good. But I don't know if I love every song the way Kim loves every song.
What songs don't you like?
I don't know. There are just
name a song. There are just,
don't put the finger guns down. There are just honestly, there are just sometimes there are just lyrics that I'm just like, this song's great. That's a bad line. Like it's like some of it I just doesn't piece together for me completely. It's not fully sung from beginning to end, but there are totally scenes where people are singing dialogue that I think could just be spoken that just doesn't go well together. I don't love it all that much. But yeah, 3 out of 4.
Mine's higher than yours.
Yeah, I think it's probably because you like it more than I do. But that's just our opinion from two people who keep telling everyone that they don't love musicals, but as it turns out, really kind of obsessed with musicals, especially horror musicals. Let us know what you thought of Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street, in the Nightmare on Film Street Discord at nofspodcast.com/discord.
If you want to listen to that Phantom of the Opera episode where we discover we love musicals.
That's a fun episode.
And there's a ton of other monster content there. Yeah. You can hit us up on Patreon at patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet. For a few bucks a month, you can listen to all of our bonus series, including that episode.
We like that movie so fucking much. Like the Joel
it hasn't
Schumacher.
Stopped. It's been months.
We also watched the Royal Albert Hall performance from 2011.
We're at the point now where we're grading which versions of performances we liked for which song.
I'm making a mixtape of just like, okay, well, I mean, like the Gerard Butler music of the night is pretty fucking great.
He's the best music of the night.
Yeah, and you know, but like, well, you know, maybe we want to get the original cast recording for Think of Me, you know. Like I'm really building like a hits playlist for all of them, but yeah, I we love that movie so much that I tried to convince Kim to do another Phantom of the Opera for the regular feed podcast. We keep listening to the musical, and I just have more thoughts about it. Like truly, they surprisingly Andrew Lloyd Webber gets Phantom of the Opera more than most monster kids. I don't know what it is. Guy's a genius.
It's really just that one tentpole banger.
It's pretty fucking
everything
rad.
Else comes is just circles that.
And yeah, you can find more musical madness like that in the Nightmare on Film Street Fiend Club. We'd love to have you. We've got watch parties coming up. We've got a shit ton of bonus content available for you. There's links in the episode description wherever you're listening to this podcast. And we'll be back again next week talking about another horror musical starring Anthony Head, the leading role. We're talking about Darren Lynn Bozeman's Repo, the Genetic Opera. But until then, I'm John.
I'm Kim.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.